All right, now allow me to set the scene here. It's the ACC title game. Pitt is playing Wake Forest. It is early on, no score. Pitt has the ball. Kenny Pickett is their quarterback. You might know Kenny Pickett as a first-round draft prospect. He was a Heisman candidate, really good player, really cerebral player, some might say. So on this play, he has taken off on a scramble. He is about 15 yards downfield when he flies into this sort of unique type of approach. His left foot starts to kick out, and his right foot starts to kind of drag behind him. He leans back as if he is going to slide, but it's a fake. It is a fake slide. He never goes down. He pops back up and runs the remaining 40 yards for the first touchdown of the game. Now, that's all well and good. It was an exciting play. Everyone enjoyed it on social media. But 5 days later, the fake slide had been outlawed. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Brentes.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, today we are going to get ahead of such moments and we are going to make our own rule changes in the NFL to make the sport better.
Finally, a chance to be the commissioner for the day, just like I've always dreamed of.
If you were the commissioner for the day, Connor, is your first order of business reclaiming the Raiders?
Yeah.
It's a touchy subject.
Yeah, I'd have to be careful, but I would do that, or I might, I might force everybody to move to different cities. You have to do stadium swap. That'd be fun.
Ooh, that'd be nice. Fun. Nice. Remember we did an exercise on the MMQB several years ago about cities we'd love to have an NFL team? Maybe we could move some of the teams to those cities.
True to form, I did say the San Antonio Buccaneers, once they left Tampa due to global warming, and I said within a few years they would win a Super Bowl. So, not totally accurate there. Global warming does still exist. The Buccaneers did win a Super Bowl. I feel pretty good about that.
Yet again, the Oracle is in the right vicinity, but hasn't exactly nailed it down to the last detail. But again, you're still providing the world valuable information, even if you don't get it exactly right.
Like a detective with some sort of degenerative, memory disease.
I can tell you some of what happened, but you're going to have to figure out the details yourself. All right, here's how it's going to work, guys. We are each going to unveil our rule change proposal, and then I think the other two people are just going to berate whomever has put forth the proposal, or perhaps agree with it, but probably berate.
I like it.
Well, I hope you do, Connor, because you are going first.
Woo! All right. So what I was going to do, but I feel like we probably couldn't have very much of a substantive discussion on this, is I was going to do that coaches can only, there's only one headset. And instead of it being like this whole network of things, it's just a rotary phone that is hardwired to the booth upstairs, and the teams have to trade it at halftime. So there's like a ceremonious, or trade it every quarter. So only one team gets the rotary phone, and then, if you win the coin toss, you can either pick, kick, receive, rotary phone, whatever. And you get it, and then you have to, ceremoniously bring it to the team the other side at the end of the quarter. So there's only one phone, and so the team spends two quarters without a telephone, which I think would be just amazing. But we'll workshop that one. We'll greenlight that one. The one that I actually want to discuss, my favorite rule change of all time, one that I was led to believe by a group of insiders that this might actually pass, and they got my hopes up so much, and then it didn't, was the Alliance of American Football 4th-and-15 onside kick alternative. I think it is the best rule change idea in sports, and I think now with the proliferation, don't cut this, every week I'm going to say proliferation, and I'm going to get it right, and I want everyone to know how hard I'm working on this. Proliferation. Of the onside kick now, where you see the poor kicker just sort of dribble it and then slam himself into the fold, like we did with Matt Prater the other day. let's keep those guys safe. That seems wildly dangerous, even more so than what the onside kick was before they put in the safety measures. So give me 4th and 15. If anyone's unfamiliar with that, in lieu of an onside kick, you can take the ball from your own 25-yard line and go for it on 4th and 15. And you can do it twice, I believe, over the course of a game. And then you just would continue the drive from there. So I think it's great. I think it's so much better. And I think it's just basically any NFL team without Patrick Mahomes was like, no, we're not voting for this.
So I thought you were going to say we need to change the onside kick because it's too easy to recover now after we saw four of them recovered in week 14.
No, it's
here,
not.
But
it's not easy enough. And here's the thing. Like, there were these coaches that were like, well, I forget who said it. It was someone on the competition committee, and they were like, well, we want to be rewarded for playing a good three quarters. And it's like, okay, well, there's not, like, the game doesn't end then, you know? And you should make it more fun at the end of the game. Like, who wants to listen to Spiro Dedes talk about, like, the Jets' heart, you know, for the last 25 minutes of this game? Like, let's get Buck Wild and give him a chance to come back.
Yeah, I like it, Connor. I will say that the change this year has apparently seemed to make the recovery of onside kicks a little bit easier, or maybe not as hard, or maybe we're just saying that because there were four successful recoveries this past weekend, the Ravens, Giants, Bears, and Cardinals. But when they changed the kickoff rules in 2018, the onside kick recovery rate plunged. And so this past year was a little bit of a counterbalance for that. They stipulated that the return team could not have any more than 9 players in the setup zone. So essentially limiting the number of players who were in a position to recover the kick. But Connor's just saying, let's do something else entirely. Let's rip the whole thing up.
I mean, this is fine, but, you know, it's still an inexact science. Like, a 4th and 15 is a fun play in general, and now you get, like, 2 of them in a game that you can use at any point in time. I just love it. And I think I mean, I also love the Alliance of American Football, but, you know, I think it was a great rule change. I think it was one of those, like, fun little momentum shifting things. And I don't know. It's just, like, a sexier play in general than, like, watching Matt Prater, like, golf tap a football and then just, like, slam himself into the ground. You know, that's not, like, it's not, there's nothing beautiful about that.
No, totally. And it's such a random play. Like, even when you watch the successful kicks, or maybe especially when you watch the successful kicks, it's just like the ball squirting around and it's the makings of a 20-year nightmare if you mess up in a critical game situation and your team loses, right? I'm just thinking about, like, waking up in a cold panic years later and you're like, oh my gosh, I was in position to grab the ball and I didn't. So I don't know. In terms of lessening anxiety, maybe we switch to something else that's a little bit less random. Because I did think when there were 4 successful recoveries this weekend, I was like, all right, maybe it's because it's cold outside. And when it's cold outside, the ball is harder to grasp. And then I was like, well, wait a second. No, because one of the recoveries happened in LA. One happened in Arizona. And even the Ravens playing Cleveland, like, it wasn't that cold. It was like 47 degrees at kickoff. So that eliminated my theory that, like, maybe the ball was harder for the other team to grasp and then it squirted around and, you know, resulted in the chaos that you need for a successful recovery.
I just want to point out 2 things. Number one, it's still, like, a major player safety issue. There was one, the Packers went over the Rams a couple weeks ago where Darnell Savage just got absolutely torpedoed in the helmet on an onside kick because it's just built for, like, huge collisions, kickers and otherwise. The other thing I want to point out, and I really do enjoy the argument that, like, well, we should be rewarded for playing so well over the first, you know, 3.5 quarters of the game. I mean, number one, what would the conversion rate be on this? Like, you know, maybe 15%, probably less than that. Like, 4th and 15 is still really difficult to convert. But the other thing is the advantage you get for playing well for 3.5 quarters is you have more points than the other team. Like, you get to keep that lead. They don't, like, hit the reset button on the score. So that is your that is your reward.
Like, imagine Dan Quinn saying that. Like, you know, well, that's not fair. We were up 28-3, like, and nobody talks about that. You know, it's like, it's an absurd thing to say. And I understand, like, I didn't see a full breakdown in the voting, but I was seeing some of the owners come out and talk about why they wouldn't vote for the rule. And it seemed to fall along the fault lines of, like, I don't have an athletic quarterback with a big arm, so there's no effing way I'm going to vote for this, you know? Like, I have Daniel Jones. You know, we're not voting for this because, you know, he can't run for a first down necessarily. He's not going to throw for a first down. So that's not fair for me. Whereas if you have Josh Allen, you're like, yeah, I would love to do this. Or Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, like, give me that twice a game, every game. And, you know, more, I was going to say in twice on Sunday, but you've already doing it twice on Sunday. So, you know what I mean?
I do. All right. I think it's time for my turn here. And what I'm going to give you guys is not so much a rule change, but sort of a change to the status quo, sort of a way of expanding everyone's minds here when it comes to football and the way we administrate the rules of the sport. And what I am proposing is the first down marker becomes movable. So let me give you two scenarios here. And the first one is you have an offensive team with a first and 10 at their own 1 yard line. So if they pick up a pre-snap penalty, a false start, or a delay of game, they could hard count forever. And the only deterrent is half a yard penalty, quarter yard penalty. There's really nothing to stop them from doing that if they really want to. What you do instead of moving them back, you know, you can move them back to half a yard, but also move the first down marker up 5 yards. So it's field position doesn't move much, but at least you now have to go for 15 yards to recognize the fact that you have committed some sort of infraction. And the related situation to that, which isn't really that related, but it's loosely tied, and that's really all we're looking for here. If you have a post-play penalty, a penalty that does not affect the play in any way, so think taunting, perhaps, and we all get really upset about taunting because, let's say, your team just ran for 8 yards on first down, and then there was a taunting penalty afterwards. Now you're 2nd and 2 because it's 2nd and 17, and that is an enormous penalty. Make any after-the-play penalties, unsportsmanlike conduct, stuff like that, field position only, and move the first down marker along with the ball when you do that. So if you picked up that penalty after the 8-yard run, you have to move back 15 yards. You go back from, you know, you ran it to midfield, but now you got to back up to your own 35, but you still just go the 2 yards because, quite frankly, we should not be deciding games on post-play penalties based on who, I don't know, pointed a finger at whom and therefore was flagged for taunting.
So if we had an NFL equivalent to, like, Malice in the Palace, you would move the ball, like, way down the opposite end of the field because the brawl was happening, like, in a different place?
Yeah. 2nd and 3, let's go.
I like it. I also like that the prompt for this show was come up with a rule change, and the first thing that Gary said was, mine's not a rule change,
it's a change to all the rules in a way.
Yeah, it's more global of a change. I guess it would affect a lot of things. Listen, I'm all in favor of improvements to the status quo, Gary. So if you think this is an improvement to the status quo, then I say go for it.
I was really hoping that Jenny had some sort of smart mathematical based takedown of Gary's thing. Like, so as I so often do, like I'm looking at Jenny and being like, she's got something. Okay, good. Don't worry. I don't have to think of a good rebuttal for Gary here. But I don't know, like, I don't want to dislike it out of sheer, like, just to be just, a jerk, you know,
just spite.
Yeah. I don't know. What could be wrong with this? Defend your own thesis. What do you have to, what's the why here?
my heart rate was absolutely through the roof as Jenny was preparing for that, because she also queued it up like she was about to
like volleyball spike in
some way.
Bang!
And I was waiting for this super obvious thing that I missed here, but it turns out that I guess my entire premise here is pretty much bulletproof at this point. But that's the thing. We get so upset about the taunting penalty, and we get so upset about it because they are huge, like, game-altering penalties. Like, they don't fit. The punishment does not fit the crime, if I could coin a phrase that's never been used before. You know, like in a basketball game, you get a technical foul in an NBA game. Your opponent gets one free throw. They get 1 point. Like, their expected, chance of victory does not move that much on this. You can completely, short-circuit a drive, or you can completely feed into a drive through this. And, yeah. I mean, the only other rule I was really going to put out there is, in light of the Kenny Pickett fake slide rule change controversy, is if I were a quarterback, I would wear the most giant helmet imaginable, like not even like the Mark Kelso helmet from the 90s, like the double gazoo helmet that he used to wear, but I'd get like an oversized novelty helmet and just we'd be in all roughing the passer based offense. And we'd have a lot of trouble in the red zone, but we'd kick a lot of short field goals, and that's how we do things.
Yeah, you mean so like if a defensive end got within 3 yards of the quarterback, he might accidentally brush up against him with his shoulder pad.
And plus, you'd make it extra heavy too, so like you'd sort of be wobbling back and forth as you go, and maybe just bumping into people. And I think you get enough flags that way to really get some sustained off. It would really regulate what you do with your offense. But that's my other idea. I guess I'd outlaw that, which they probably already do. You probably can't wear a novelty size helmet, but.
It reminds me of the time I had. I was in a discussion with some hockey folks, and I had already admitted that I had never seen an entire professional hockey game from start to finish, and so they were livid. And then, because hockey people really like hockey, but then I was like, you know, all these teams are so dumb. Why wouldn't you just get a goalie large enough to take up the entire goal? Like, get a goalie that's just gigantic, and there is nowhere that you can score because he's so big. And then, like, they explained all these, like, things that I was just like, no, I like big goalie. And everyone was so mad at me, but it's perfect. Big helmet, big goalie. The other point I was going to make, though, with Kenny Pickett is there's a lot of NFL quarterbacks that do a version of this. Like, I remember I first noticed it with Robert Griffin. I think Kyler Murray does it. Cam Newton was a serial offender with, like, the, I'm going to the sideline to give myself up, but then, let me get, like, 4 or 5 more yards. And, like, those little, like, compounding interest changes are, like, over the course of a game can really add up.
No, I'm with you. And Pickett did it. I think to the most, I don't know, it was the most theatrical version of it. But you definitely see, like, you slow up, and if you just drag that back foot a little bit, it looks like you're going to slide. And obviously, then you get your protected player stuff activated, and they set off the fireworks and play the music for protected players, and that's the way it goes. But this one was, it was a smart play. It worked. He scored a touchdown. But yeah, I think like weaponizing those player protections is probably something of a slippery slope.
Yeah, it would be like waving for the fair catch and then just taking off for the return, which obviously you can't do.
get a fake third arm out there. Like, no. Oh, I could do so much with fake body parts out on the field.
This is going a strange direction, and maybe it's best if we just move on to the next rule change.
I want a whole pod on big helmet quarterback.
Jenny, please go.
All right, I will go. This is a favorite of Connor Orr's. So as usual, Connor and I share many ideas because we've known each other for a very long time. The idea that you would score field goals based off of the length of the field goal. So 50 plus would be 4 points, and then you would work inward from there. I'm not exactly sure where you'd cut the tiers off. Maybe 1 to 15 would be 1. 15 to 30 would be 2. 30 to 40 would be 3. I'm not sure. Or maybe you'd move it in a little bit more. Maybe the three-point range would be a lot. Anyways, point being, this would introduce a lot of fun strategy elements to the game. Like, for instance, if you're the Ravens and you have Justin Tucker and you're in field goal range, maybe you have Lamar Jackson take a sack so that you move back a little further so Justin Tucker could get a four-point field goal. Just a lot of potential things at play. So the idea being is you're not necessarily wanting to get as close as possible to kick a field goal, because if you kick a field goal from a little farther out, you could get more points. But I don't know what you think about the stratification of the tiers. Where should the cutoffs be?
I think anything above a 40 is when you start jacking up the point total.
Okay, so would it be 3 until that point, you think?
No, I agree that even closer, like 1 to 10 would be like 1, and then right. That way it basically eliminates the Jason Garrett offense from the face of the earth. It just, you can't he can't be a coach because he wouldn't score any points, and or Mike McCarthy for that matter. But I like that because we're here to score touchdowns. That's what we're here to do. We're here to punch it across the goal line, because you know what happened, like, when the game was invented, like, it was just an offensive lineman, like, blasting it through with, like, his foot kicking straight forward. And, like, it was never meant to be what it is now. And I think that now that kickers have gotten so good and so specialized, you have to reward them for that, but also punish the fact that, like, a 15-yard field goal, I would guess, given enough opportunities, the three of us could probably hit in a live game situation if we really connected with one.
Connor, now that you're going back to the root of football, I have to insert this episode's token 2010 to 2011 Jets reference. It just triggered something in my mind. Do you remember the day that Mike Westhoff said he invented the onside kick?
Yes.
And then the next day, Rex Ryan came to his press conference with Wikipedia printed out to show when the onside kick was invented and that it was before Mike Westhoff was in football. Well, you'll never believe this. And this, I'm remembering this well now because I was cleaning out my desk drawer recently and I have like a stack of papers back from my Star Ledger days, and in it is the Wikipedia of onside kick. And you know when you print, sometimes there's like the date of printing at the bottom, and the date of printing is like 2011. So evidently I saved this piece of paper that Rex Ryan printed out that day in 2011.
God. Oh man.
Onside kick. So yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because it seemed like that would circle back around to all of our discussions today.
Put that not in the Hall of Fame, but that should probably be displayed at, like, you know, Jets HQ at this point.
I know, right? I mean, that was the peak of the Jets of late, at least.
Oh, the last time I talked to Mike Westhoff was a couple of, like, 3 or 4 years ago at the combine, and I asked him what I might have been talking to him over the phone, and I asked him what he was doing, and he said that he was sitting on his back porch throwing coconuts at alligators. And so, just like the ultimate guy, you know, like, just what a dude. Mike Westhoff, so classic.
Well, I wonder what he'd think of our tiered field goal proposal.
Well, my first question is, and it's not so much a question as more of a social construct I want to put out here.
Gary's going to rain in our parade, Connor.
Gary, what was the name of the lawyer from The Simpsons?
Oh, Lionel Hutz?
Yeah. You had a very distinct Lionel Hutz vibe on that one.
So you don't work on contingency? No, money down. I'll tweet that out, and people can see. It's a grammatical joke. You'll appreciate it. What I was going to say is, what does the analytics card look like that's going to guide coaches in this? That's what I'm really curious about, because you're not only thinking about, you have to consider score. So, okay, you know, whatever, if we're down 1 point, like, yeah, you don't need the four-pointer with like a minute to go. But how much you need the four-pointer? Where is, like, the cutoff? What, you know, if you have Justin Tucker, maybe your 54-yard field goal, you can be, like, 70% sure it's going through. But, you know, if you have oh, what's the name of one of the bad kickers?
Michael Badgley.
Oh, no.
Connor.
I walked right into it.
Boom.
Oh, God.
That was good.
Ba-bow.
Michael Badgley is maybe more like a 30% chance of making that kick. So.
Okay. That's a good point, Gary. I would venture to guess for that very reason that coaches would not support this rule change because they don't want more scenarios in which their game management could be second guessed. But I think what you kind of have to do is similar to what the Patriots did in the game in Buffalo where there were the wild wind conditions and they were assessing how far out you could actually kick from when you were going into the wind and what it was like the 10-yard line or something. So you would probably have to, in pregame warmups, assess your kicker's ability to make from different distances in the current conditions. And like maybe that would inform. I mean, you obviously have a sense of how good your kicker is in their range generally, but the reason they do pregame warmups is to test it in those conditions, right? So you'd have to really drill it down, like test at the boundaries between when things go from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and have that really inform your decision. And then hope also that the weather conditions or the wind direction don't change substantially during the course of the game.
Also, if you had the garbage picking, field goal kicking Philadelphia phenomenon, you could kick regularly from 75 yards and, you know, you could get like 6 points every time, which is something to keep in mind. Big part of your strategy. I'm just waiting for the first time. I already kind of blew the Jason Garrett line here, but like the first time he somehow gets back into the NFL in this scenario as a head coach and like they're down 5 and he plays to get to the 4-point field goal line and then just kick it, you know, like because like it's just going to be entertaining to watch like all these coaches just in a herd mentality just do the dumb thing again, but just with more points than the 3 points. It's really going to be inspired.
I mean, it just would be a lot of fun, and it's like a brain teaser, right? Every time teams were in field goal range, you'd find yourself calculating when they put the field goal range red line on the field, they'd have to have different lines for 1, 2, 3, 4 points. Like, it just introduces a lot of additional fun elements to the game, which is what we all need.
Yes, yeah, the different field goal lines, and then you would pull the Nickelodeon slime-tastic thing, and you'd have both of the goalposts would also be confetti launchers, and if anyone hit like a 5-pointer, it'd be like, and like, you know, you just cover the field in confetti, and you know, everyone would really enjoy it, and you'd be like, I don't know, you'd have like Del Taco sponsor it, and I think it'd be a fun thing.
Do you have a rule change you want to propose? Would you like to be mocked or perhaps praised on this podcast? Why don't you send it in? Or if you have any NFL questions, I mean, we'll take them. We can interact with our listeners in some way, shape, or form. Just send your email to themmqb@gmail.com or hit up any of us on Twitter. The MMQB NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelley Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.